So first of all, I'd like to say good afternoon and thank you to everyone for attending today's Load Shed Service for Imports Information Session. My name is Ryan Ferguson, and I'm the Director of Commercial here at DISO. My teams develop, implement, and manage DISO's commercial agreements. We're excited to have launched our latest LSLI procurement competition, and we appreciate you joining us today to learn more about this opportunity. The intent for today's presentation is to provide further information on the upcoming LSLI competition. There will be time for Q&A at the end of today's session. We'll let you know how best to do this shortly. For awareness, this webinar is being recorded, and we will be posting copies of both the recording and the presentation used today to the DISO website for those who are unable to attend. I'd now like to make some introductions. I already introduced myself, but joining me today as presenters will be Scott and Dan. Scott Fleming is our manager of procurement, and he has the day-to-day responsibility for designing and implementing our competitive procurements. Dan McKeown is a senior analyst on our procurement team. He is responsible for helping to design and implement these procurements. Also joining us today are two of the ISO subject matter experts on LSSI. Eric is a senior advisor on our commercial team and has extensive experience managing our current agreements. Biju is our manager of operations, engineering, and market support, and he has responsibility for determining all the key technical requirements for LSSI. I'll now turn the presentation over to Scott to cover some housekeeping items, highlight some key logistics, share the purpose of today's meeting, and provide more information on the procurement and LSSI itself.
Thanks, Ryan. Firstly, we wanted to provide a notice regarding the recording of this session and the collection of personal information. This is done for the purpose of capturing stakeholder engagement for the LSSI procurement competition and is in accordance with Section 33C of the Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act. If you have any questions or concerns, you can contact the ISO's Director of Information and Governance Services by email at privacy@iso.ca. We also wanted to outline our current protocol regarding COVID-19, given it's still ongoing. The ISO's top priorities are the health and well-being of our employees and stakeholders while continuing to meet the electricity needs of Albertans. All ISO meetings with external stakeholders are via phone or webinar currently, and will be so indefinitely. We typically use Zoom for stakeholder engagements such as this. There's additional information available on our website at www.aeso.ca and follow the path to stakeholder engagement COVID-19. As we're using Zoom for today's information session, if you're here hearing us, you've successfully navigated Zoom to listen to this information session so far. But we'd like to provide some further guidance today as to how to use it. All attendees are in listen-only mode and their cameras and microphones are disabled. Attendees can ask questions throughout using the in-meeting chat window. There's a Q&A logo at the bottom you'll see. And questions will be addressed at the end of the presentation during our question and answer period. As the ISO's objective is to document questions as accurately as possible, we're asking webinar participants to please submit questions in writing using the Zoom functionality, which we'll explain here in a moment. When you submit your question, please start it by typing in your first and last name and the name of your company in the text field. If you're dialed in by telephone and need to ask a question verbally during the question and answer period, please first start by introducing yourself, including your full name and the name of your company. Now here's how to ask questions using Zoom. If you're joining us by a computer, hover your cursor over the bottom area of the Zoom application and the controls will appear. You can then use the in-meeting Q&A chat window to type in your question. If you're joining us by a smartphone, please tap the Q&A button and then type in your question that way. Then for any that may be dialed in by a telephone, we've got a subsequent slide here that has some further instructions. So being dialed in using your telephone as a conference call, and if you have a question during the question and answer period, you can ask it by first pressing *9 on your telephone's dial pad to raise your hand. And then once we get to you, you'll need to unmute your microphone by pressing *6 on your telephone's dial pad. Please then re-mute once you're finished talking by pressing *6 again. So that concludes our housekeeping and logistics items, and we can proceed with the focus of the presentation today. We are indeed very excited to have launched this LSSI procurement competition. And I think we had about 62 people register, and we thank you for joining us today. We wanted first to start with an overview of this information session. The purpose of it is to share information regarding this LSSI procurement competition, including its objectives, structure, and timelines, and to provide further details on how to participate. Additionally, we'll provide some background, including an overview of LSSI. Please note that the scope of this information session includes the current LSSI procurement competition and clarification regarding becoming and operating as an LSSI service provider under the upcoming service term. And given our focus today, what is out of scope and not part of the conversation are more general topics such as, for example, the transmission interties and details of the June 7th trip event of the Alberta to BC intertie, or the existing import load shed agreements. Note that we are not seeking feedback during this information session, but rather we will ask answer clarification questions. Feedback on the competition or the import load shed agreement and key provisions can be provided during the request for expressions of interest using the feedback forms that are included with the request for expressions of interest document. And that's available on our webpage. Now, moving on to the agenda for what we're going to cover today. We've already covered introductions, housekeeping items, Zoom instructions, and the information session overview. So next, we will start with an overview of the ISO and ancillary service procurement, then provide information on the stages and timelines of this LSSI competition. We will then provide an overview of LSSI and get into some further detail regarding the LSSI competition. We'll also outline next steps and provide some considerations for the request for a proposal stage. We will then close the session with our question and answer period. First, for any of you that may be less familiar, we'd like to share some high-level information about the ISO. The ISO is an independent, not-for-profit, statutory corporation that was created under the Electric Utilities Act to operate in the best interest of all Albertans. The ISO provides the function of the independent system operator and is tasked with providing for the safe, reliable, and economic operation of the Alberta Interconnected Electric System. There are four core functions of the ISO. These are to provide customer access to the transmission system, to plan the transmission system, to operate the grid, to plan and operate a fair, efficient, open, and competitive market. And this includes managing ancillary services and also the renewable electricity program. Ancillary services are essential to the reliable operation of the Alberta market and are required to ensure that electricity can be transmitted reliably, efficiently, and securely across the Alberta interconnected electric system. In addition to LSSI, the ISO procures ancillary services, including operating reserves and other out-of-market services, including transmission must run and Black Star services. Now moving to this current LSSI procurement competition specifically, we're implementing a two-stage competition consisting of the request for expressions of interest stage, followed by the request for proposal stage. The request for expressions of interest stage will aid in determining interest in the competition and facilitate gathering of feedback to inform next steps in the procurement of LSSI and could help us further refine elements of the competition. The request for a proposal stage is where interested parties will submit their proposals and bid prices for their respective facilities. During the RFP stage, proponents can submit feedback to the draft import load shed agreement. The successful bidders will be selected through a transparent evaluation process during the RFP and will enter into an import load shed agreement with the ISO. And note that you'll occasionally see us refer to this agreement by its acronym, so ILSA or ILSA, throughout the presentation and in our competition documents. Now, we've got a graphic here to provide a timeline of the current LSSI competition. So starting with the blue portion at the left there, the request for expressions of interest opened on September 17th and is non-binding for all respondents. We'll close on Wednesday, October 7th with the expression of interest form and, if applicable, the import load shed agreement key provisions feedback form being due. Next, the green portion is the request for proposal stage, and that is anticipated to open on October 28th. The request for proposals competition document and the draft import load shed agreement is targeted to be posted targeted to be posted and made available on October 28th, with a feedback period to the draft agreement expected to be open until November 12th. The final import load shed agreement will be posted during the RFP stage, and that is planned to occur on November 26th. The RFP will close on December 10th, with proposals being due. Successful proponents are targeted to be selected by late Q1 2021, which is the orange portion of this timeline, entitled award there. Next, moving to the right in the gray, following award and by October 1st, 2021, the ISO is requiring service providers to complete testing and submit a certification report to the ISO confirming compliance to the requirements as outlined in the LSSI eligibility and requirements, of which a draft is attached to the request for expressions of interest document. So this timing of October 1st is to allow time after award for any new LSSI provider to complete the necessary upgrades to their facilities and become an LSSI provider, while having the facility upgrades completed and tested ahead of the required service period. The start of the service period is January 1st, 2022, which commences the 3-year term of the import load shed agreement, and that ends on December 31st, 2024, as you see in the bottom of the gray portion of the graphic. Next, we'll provide an overview of the request for expressions of interest stage. Hopefully, most of you listening today have accessed the request for expressions of interest document from our LSSI procurement webpage. And this slide shows a snapshot of the front cover to show you what it looks like. Now for some further detail regarding the first stage in the competition, as we've already mentioned, is the request for expressions of interest. It is non-binding and it is not a prerequisite for participating in the RFP. With this stage, the ISO is providing information regarding the LSSI procurement competition stages and key dates, key provisions of the upcoming import load shed agreement, and a draft of the LSSI eligibility criteria and requirements. The ISO is identifying parties through this stage to express interest in the competition, to provide information on prospective facilities, and provide feedback generally on the competition using the expression of interest form. Also, the ISO is looking for parties to provide any feedback they may have to the key provisions of the import load shed agreement. And interested parties can do so using the import load shed agreement or ILSA key provisions feedback form. The form's deadline is October 7th at 3:30 p.m. And there's further detail in the request for expressions of interest document, which again is available on our website, along with fillable versions of the forms that are available at links below it for a separate download. Submission is via email to lssi@aso.ca, and further instructions are contained in the request for expressions of interest document. And here, this slide also shows you a screenshot providing a portion of the first page of the fillable expression of interest form. That's currently available on our website so that you get a sense of what it looks like. So with that, I'll pass it on to our senior analyst, Dan McEwen, who will provide us with an overview of LSSI, including what it is and how it works for those of you that may be less familiar with it.
Great. Thanks a lot for that, Scott. So as Scott mentioned, I'll provide a brief overview of what LSSI is on this slide. So LSSI is a transmission reliability product that helps enable import transfer capability without compromising system reliability. It's used to mitigate sudden frequency deviations that may occur due to sudden loss of the BC-Montana interties when importing. LSSI providers agree to be tripped offline following the frequency drop to 59.5 hertz, and this load shedding allows for the arrest of frequency decay to preserve system stability. So on this slide here, I'll spend some time walking through how LSSI works at a high level. So I'll start off with availability. Availability when offered by a service provider. So a service provider determines its capability to provide LSSI and submits LSSI availability offers to the ISO system controller via SCADA. Next, the ISO then determines the need for arming of LSSI based on two key factors, the intertie import levels and the Alberta internal load conditions. Next, if arming is required, the ISO dispatches the service provider. The LSSI service provider arms the facility relays such that they are continuously monitoring system frequency and will drop following system frequency reaching 59.5 Hertz. If the arming service is no longer required or the service provider changes their hourly offers to zero, the ISO will issue a disarm dispatch to the service provider and the relay is disarmed. And finally, if a trip should be required, when a frequency of 59.5 Hertz is detected and the arm load experiences an under frequency condition, the full arm load trips within 0.2 seconds. Alternatively, the ISO has the option to trip off the load by sending a SCADA trip signal whereby the armed volume must trip within 10 minutes. So this slide here, I'll just basically walk us through the three separate components that comprise the payment mechanism. So the total payment to an LSSI provider on a monthly basis as the sum of these three components subject to compliance requirements. The first is the availability payment. So this is where a service provider is compensated for making their load available for potential arming. The availability payment is an hourly-based payment, which is paid in accordance with the service provider's offer to provide LSSI arming service when required. The payment is equal to the availability price multiplied by the volume available for that specific hour. The availability price is set by the ISO during the request for proposal stage of the competition for all providers at $6 per megawatt. Moving on to arming payment. A service provider is given an additional payment when the under-frequency relay associated with the LSSI load is armed. The arming payment is an hourly-based payment, which is paid when a service provider's facility is armed and actively monitoring system frequency for response. The payment is equal to the arming price multiplied by the volume armed in that specific hour. Arming of the service provider is based on the arming price merit order from lowest to highest. The arming price will be submitted by proponents during the request for proposal stage of the competition. The third payment, which is the trip payment. So a service provider is paid when their load is tripped due to an under-frequency event. The trip payment is an event-based payment, which is paid when a trip event occurs. The payment is equal to the trip price multiplied by the volume tripped. The trip price is fixed at $1,000 per megawatt. And for context, trips are very infrequent. There have been four LSSI trips in the period from 2012 to year-to-date 2020. Moving on to compliance. Compliance is a critical component of the import load shed agreement, given that fast frequency response is the ISO's primary tool for mitigating frequency decay caused by the sudden loss of the intertie while importing. The tolerance limit remains at 95%. When armed, the actual volume must remain above 95%, the dispatch volume at all points during the hour to provide certainty of response. Settlement calculations of LSSI payments are subject to a monthly compliance assessment. Compliance reviews examine events such as a forced outage, a failure to supply, or a tolerance excursion. Where non-compliance events are identified, hourly payments or the applicable portion are clawed back through a settlement process. Compliance assessments are conducted based on the full set of SCADA data provided to the ISO, including actual load volumes and arming response signals. Cumulative events of failure to supply will result in the application of the payment adjustment mechanism, also known as PAM, factors being applied to the monthly payment. Failure to supply events caused by an approved force outage will be excluded from the payment adjustment mechanism assessment. Now with that, I'll pass it back to Scott to summarize the LSSI eligibility and technical requirements.
Thanks, Dan. Mind advancing the slide once? Great. Over the next few slides, we'll walk through certain aspects of the LSSI eligibility and technical requirements, as Dan had mentioned. However, I would like to remind everyone that the full LSSI requirements document is included in the Request for Expressions of Interest document as Appendix C, and that's for your reference and further detail. So what's shown in this information session presentation is not a complete list or summary of the requirements that are included there. So please review the full version of the LSSI requirements to determine eligibility and see what those requirements are. As you can see on this slide, some of the eligibility requirements for providing LSSI include being located in the Alberta Balancing Authority area and the facility being connected to the Alberta Interconnected Electric System. The load may be an aggregation of several individual loads from various facilities. Each service provider must be able to provide a minimum of 5 megawatts of LSSI. But note that loads smaller than 5 megawatts are still able to participate, but would do so through an aggregator. And that aggregator would operate as the service provider, being the party to the ILSA. Loads that are part of the under frequency load shedding or UFLS program are eligible to provide LSSI except for the time delayed blocks D1, D2, and D3. Now, to examine certain aspects of the required trip response, I wanted to highlight a few things. So firstly, the trip requirement has been maintained as requiring disconnection within 0.2 seconds of the frequency reaching 59.5 hertz. And the under frequency relay scheme shall be developed using digital under frequency relays, measuring frequency at the load facility. Load must be able to remain off the grid for up to 60 minutes following a trip. And we have requirements for measurement of data at each isolation device. For facilities rather, with behind the fence equipment, the trip event record must be assessed at the point of delivery. Then following a trip event, data is due within 5 business days. Again, further detail on the technical requirements is contained in the full version of the LSSI eligibility and requirements. The draft is included as Appendix C to the REOI document. Lastly, on the technical requirements, we also wanted to summarize the key requirements for testing. Again, this is not a complete representation and further detail is contained in the LSSI eligibility and requirements. As mentioned on the procurement competition timeline slide, we are requiring a report certified by a professional engineer registered with the Association of Professional Engineers and Geoscientists of Alberta, that's referred to by the acronym as APEGA, based on the testing requirements by October 1st, 2021. This includes testing to demonstrate trip functionality of the relay. For clarity, we wanted to note though that we do not require the actual tripping of a facility's load for this test report. We also have an annual requirement during the term of the import load shed agreement, as you'll see in the ILSA key provisions included with the REOI. And this is to certify compliance with the LSSI requirements, including data measurement and SCADA, and also to certify that no material changes to the facility providing LSSI have occurred. But note that we are not anticipating to require a retest of trip functionality of the relays and breakers annually during the term of the import load shed agreement. please consult information provided in the request for expressions of interest document for further detail. Now, with an eye to continuous improvement and lessons learned, we are proposing some key changes from the 2018 import load shed agreement in this procurement. Now, having summarized some of the key commercial terms that Dan did for us and also the technical requirements that I just went through, we thought we would highlight some select changes from, again, the 2018 import load shed agreement that we're proposing for this procurement for your convenience. Again, this is to help highlight some of the changes, but this is not a complete or exhaustive list of all of the changes. Interested parties need to check the ELSA key provisions, which is an appendix to the REOI. Further, there may be changes between the ELSA key provisions and the full detailed version of the import load shed agreement that will be provided during the RFP stage. So now looking at the table, firstly, to provide enhanced operational flexibility, we removed the availability factor adjustment mechanism. We removed the upper tolerance limit and removed the timing threshold requirement of 10 minutes from the forced outage definition. We fixed the availability price similar to past LSSI agreements prior to 2018, but we increased the availability price by 20% as compared to the historical agreements prior to 2018. So it historically was $5, and as you'll see in the ELSA key provisions in the REOI, we're setting it at $6 per megawatt for this procurement. We revised the definition of failure to supply to remove tolerance excursions. We revised the performance adjustment mechanism table accordingly and revised the minimum offer requirement. To better align interests, we have provided the opportunity to earn partial arming payments following a forced outage should a service provider be redispatched to a lower arm volume. And lastly, we introduced an ISO termination for change in law, but we did not include a termination for convenience as was included in some of the historical agreements, again, prior to 2018. Similarly, here are proposed changes from the 2018 LSSI eligibility and requirements. Again, please note that this slide has been included to highlight some of the changes, and it's not a complete or exhaustive list of all of them. So we have increased the minimum participation size to 5.0 megawatts, and this is to reflect the size of those loads that operate as a standalone service provider typically, but again, with smaller loads still being able to participate through an aggregator. To facilitate settlement activities and compliance reviews, we have added some SCADA requirements and provided further clarity, including introducing two additional SCADA points to better facilitate logistics of providing LSSI and in support of the change for a partial arming payment. We have revised the offer timing requirement by 2 minutes to facilitate the ISO's real-time operations by the system controllers from T23 to T25 prior to the start of the hour. We have also introduced further clarity regarding requirements for testing and certification, as well as data measurement and data provision requirements. Interested parties need to check the ELSA key provisions and the draft of the LSSI eligibility requirements, both of which are appendices to the request for expressions of interest document, which again is currently available on our LSSI procurement webpage. Further, we'd like to note that there may be changes between the ELSA key provisions and the import load shed agreement that will be provided during the RFP stage, first in draft and then in final form. So now moving to next steps, as we discussed at the outset of the session today, we will be posting this presentation on our website at the link noted, so both the presentation slides and a recording of this session. If you have any questions from now until the RFP stage opens, or are submitting an expression of interest form, please use the LSSI at ISO.ca mailbox. Now, looking forward to the request for proposals stage of the competition. That is anticipated to launch on October 28th, with proposals being due December 10th. The request for a proposal stage will be run through a Bonfire site, and that is where the documents will be posted. To obtain access to Bonfire, following the request for expressions of interest submission deadline of October 7th, the ISO will open the registration process, post the access agreement, and provide further instruction regarding accessing the Bonfire site on our LSSI procurement webpage. Note that once access has been obtained, the Bonfire site can be accessed using a web browser. Interested parties wishing to participate in the request for proposals will need to obtain access to the Bonfire site to access the RFP competition documents and the import load shed agreement, and then participate in the RFP. Note that once the RFP stage has opened, again targeted for October 28th, all communications with the ISO, including all inquiries, will be through the Bonfire site. Further instructions regarding the communication protocol during the request for proposal stage will be included in the RFP document. Lastly, in looking ahead to the RFP, if you could advance one slide, please. There's a few considerations for those who are interested in participating further in the LSSI competition that we wanted to highlight. So firstly, we wanted to adhere to timelines generally. And these are described in the submission of feedback or forms and submission of proposals as well. Please sign forms where requested by the appropriate company officials. Note the details, especially as it relates to instances of must or should in describing requirements, and complete and submit information forms in the manner instructed. If in doubt, please seek any required clarification during the inquiry period up until open of the RFP stage using the LSSI mailbox at lssi@aso.ca, and again after open of the RFP stage using the Bonfire site. We want this competition to be successful, and we appreciate your diligence in this regard, and we appreciate you adhering to the communications protocol as we've outlined, with again further detail regarding the RFP stage coming in the RFP document. We look forward to your participation, and we thank you for your interest in LSSI. Now we'll be moving to the question and answer period portion of the session. So if you haven't done so already, you can submit your questions now, and please do so using the Zoom controls. Again, please note that we're not seeking feedback during this session, and we've allowed for feedback on the competition or the import load shed agreement key revisions to be provided using the feedback forms included with the request for expressions of interest document. So should you have feedback, please fill out and submit the form rather than providing it here. Questions that we will answer today will be focused on clarification regarding the LSSI procurement competition, such as the competition structure and timelines, details on how to participate, as well as details regarding providing LSSI for the service period targeted by this competition. Also, for clarity, we will not be answering questions outside of the scope or more broadly, such as I'd already mentioned earlier about details regarding the June 7th trip events, or the existing import load shed agreements. We will take as many questions as we can during this session and try to answer as many as we can on the spot, time permitting. But note that answers to all questions, including those that we cannot get to, will be posted on the ISO's LSSI procurement webpage shortly, and those answers will be the official response to questions from the ISO. And maybe one reminder, just before we jump in, please, when typing in your question, please do state the organization that you work for and your first and last name as well, just so we have a complete and accurate record of the questions we received. Great, so we can now proceed with the question and answer period.
Hi, Scott. Your first question is from Miles Blakely from Eureka. And the question is, what if the facilities have already been tested?
Hi, Miles. Thank you for the question. We are requiring that all facilities that are successful in this procurement competition and awarded an import load shed agreement undergo testing and provide the certification reports. So that goes for if a facility had been tested in the past or a new provider, we're requiring that all facilities do that test and provide the report with the timelines indicated. I should mention as well, we are allowing, as we mentioned earlier, feedback through the EOI form and the ILSA key provisions feedback form. So if you have any further specific feedback in that regard, please feel free to put it in the form there and we'll have a look at it.
Next question is from Akira Yamamoto from TransAlta Corporation. And the question is, are energy storage loads eligible to participate in the competition?
Thank you, Akira, for the question. And no, this procurement competition is a load shed service for imports competition specifically. But I should mention to please stay tuned to the ISO's energy storage roadmap, because I am aware there's a fast frequency response service targeted at new technology, including energy storage. I believe the timing of that is aligned with the energy storage roadmap's long-term implementation. But as I understand, there's going to be further detail in that regard provided here in the fourth quarter of 2020 through the energy storage roadmap regarding new technology and future eligibility to provide fast frequency response.
Thanks, Scott. Your next question is from Angie Hanawa from NLX. The question is, will there still be availability factor included in the availability payment as it was in the current iteration of LSSI?
Hi, Angie. Thanks for the question. No, we are proposing to remove the availability factor completely from the import load shed agreement. So as Dan had walked through in the slide, we're setting the availability price and then have removed the availability factor calculation from it. So, and again, I'll say as well, if you have any feedback in that regard, we'd be interested in that, and please submit that in the ILSA key provisions feedback form.
Arush Malhotra from Imperial Oil has asked, can we arm the load shed to drop a small part of our plant load when we receive the trip command via SCADA?
Hi, Arush, that's an interesting question. We may have to take that one away to craft you a detailed answer, because it could be one where I believe I understand how you're asking the question, but to really explain arming and volumes and compliance and how all that works, it's probably better if we build that out in detail, and then we can give you a full picture rather than me give you a partial answer here today. Thank you for that, though. Again, we'll post questions and answers after this session, so we'll address that question certainly. Yeah, and you might be on mute if you're still talking again, but
sorry. Oh,
yeah. No worries. Question of presence, yeah.
Burke Huntel with ALPAC has asked, if the plant is down but still has a load below 5 megawatts, can the load be offered in, or should the offer go to zero?
Yeah, I think that's probably another takeaway, Burke. The 5 megawatts is certainly our minimum participation size to be able to be eligible. But in terms of the mechanics of, low volume offers and how we'd manage that between availability and then moving into arming, I think we'll have to take that one away to as well give you a complete answer. But thank you for the question.
And let's see. Matt, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce the last name, with ATCO, has asked, is there a prerequisite to have existing DTS contract with the ISO in order to be considered a service provider of LSSI?
Hi, Matt. Yeah, thanks for the question. In the eligibility, we certainly didn't get into that level of detail, so we appreciate the question. You saw summary of the eligibility requirements in there, and that's certainly full detail available, as we mentioned, in the requirements. But that specific scenario, we'll give it some thought in terms of, you know, a load potentially that could meet the eligibility but may not. Admittedly, I'm not aware of all the circumstances where a load wouldn't have a DTS contract. So yeah, we'll discuss that one with our regulatory folks and get you an answer to that one as well.
And Irish Milhotra with Imperial has another question. How do we get information on what changes are required to the load shed scheme and who will implement the changes? For example, will it be the ISO or the participant?
Hi, Abbas. Yeah, good question. Certainly in the LSSI requirements, you know, there's certain, you know, upgrades that may be needed to a facility to become a provider. So things like having the capability from an under frequency relay to, you know, complete an automated trip. I would include a SCADA system to meet the SCADA system requirements. It would also include sufficient data logging and of sufficient resolution at each isolation device, right, such as a breaker, and or at the point of, well, I would be and at the point of delivery if it's a behind the fence configuration. So so generally the upgrades that we're talking about are the service provider upgrades to become a provider, but each facility could be different in terms of what they already have there for protection and control and SCADA and things like that. So I would say each load that is interested would need to look at the requirements in detail and get a technical assessment, you know, based on their specific facility and you know what infrastructure they have there currently. And maybe if I recall, Dan, I think there might have been a second part. Who will implement the changes? Will it be the ISO their participant? Is that right? Yeah, just to confirm, so that those are the service provider or the participants upgrades that we're referring to, essentially to become an LSSI service provider. And I think I said this probably a few times during the presentation, but the technical requirements are available as Appendix C to the Request for Expressions of Interest document.
A question from John Conowalik with Syncrude. Will the participants that have on-site generation and behind the fence loads that can be eligible for LSSI, will time-synced SCADA data be required from the generators, the point of connection, and the LSSI load itself, namely as speed responsive governors of the generators, will increase generation per their group curves, and the net change at the point of supply metering point may not show a corresponding reduction of power at the point of connection?
Thanks, John. Yeah, that's a good technical question for sure. So I'll answer as much as I can, but I expect we'll have to get our technical team to craft the response for you, certainly. But yeah, so we, as you saw, we are requiring in this procurement time synchronization of SCADA data with the GPS clock. But in terms of the specific points, we'll have a look to see. I mean, the focus is certainly the load that's providing LSSI, and there'd be, you know, certain feeders and things that are configured as a part of that scheme. But admittedly, yeah, I'll have to get our technical team's involvement to craft a detailed answer for you there.
The next question is from Ed DePalazzo with DePal Consulting. And the question is, can an LSSI provider specify that an entire block of power, for example, 20 megawatts, must be fully armed and cannot be partially armed?
Hi, Ed. Thanks for the question. It's an interesting one. So it certainly the offers that are made for availability, that's how availability is calculated, and then the ISO arms a volume of LSSI through a dispatch. And once there's that arming dispatch, it's really to the full amount is my understanding. But if there's any further color on that, our subject matter experts can chime in. But again, we'll respond with an answer via the website.
Ed has a follow-up question. Does the ISO have a list of EPC firms that can help providers build the capability for LSSI?
No, the ISO, so thanks Ed again, the ISO typically doesn't recommend EPC firms, you know, or make specific recommendations of, you know, what engineering or technical firms to work with, but certainly there are a few in Alberta that Lovitz could contact, you know, in terms of someone with that type of competence in terms of protection and controls and SCADA and things like that. So they're certainly out there, but we wouldn't get involved in, you know, recommending one company over another or providing a list or anything like that. So certainly that's up to the service provider to find out who has that capability and who they'd like to work with as needed.
Thanks, Scott. Reagan Bear of Miller Western has asked, will the number of PANs reset to zero every calendar year, or will they carry over?
Thanks, Reagan, for the question. As proposed in the key revisions, we amended the PAM table and the number of events and things like that, but it's still anticipated to be based on a calendar year. Yeah, so aligned with each calendar year over the 3-year term. Yeah.
Thanks, Scott, just catching up with the questions here. Angie Hanawa from NLX is asking, for aggregators, is the list of facilities included in the RFP RAOI forms final, or can facilities be added or subtracted post RFP?
Yeah, maybe I'll give you a bit of a broader answer there, Angie. Thanks. So I'll talk about the RAOI as well. So in the request for expressions of interest, the first stage, we do collect, you know, prospective facility and information. And certainly that's the ISO's objective is to gather facility information and determine who's interested. So that is distinct and separate from the RFP. And then in the RFP, we do require facility information, you know, to be provided during the RFP, but then how that's handled after that, like in the import load shed agreement, there's further information in the ILSA key provisions document, and we'll have further detail, but it's essentially a similar approach to what we have with the current 2018 import load shed agreement, where the facility has to be named and provided in the RFP. And then there is a section and some information on facility information there.
Thanks, okay. Scott. Angie has a follow-up question. She's asking, is the minimum arming guarantee coming back?
Thanks, Angie. So for the payment mechanism in this procurement, we considered a range of options, certainly, and looked at, you know, what we were trying to achieve with it and implementing lessons learned and things like that. So so to answer your question, no, we're not proposing that the minimum arming guarantee come back. We are proceeding with the three components to the payment mechanism being availability, arming, and trip.
Thanks, Scott. The next question is from John Conowalek with Syncrude. Can a single provider provide multiple LSSI blocks at different prices with their RFP submission, for example, or is aligned with physically distinct loads/relays within their system?
Thanks for the question. No, my understanding is we have a set availability price, and then you make the offer for availability for LSSI based on your volume, and then that availability offer is tied to that price. So we essentially have each service provider make an offer for availability, and then that's based on the fixed price. So it'd be kind of, you know, one offer. So not like the energy market or something like that, where you have multiple blocks at different prices. So it'd essentially be the fixed price there. So
yeah, maybe I'll step on that one a little bit, Scott. Thanks. So the way to, if you're looking to create opportunity for different loads within your location, as long as they're physically distant, the way to accomplish that would be to actually put in multiple RFP submissions. So you'd put in separate submissions for each one of those facilities where you're looking to have different characteristics as part of the RFP process.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. That's a good point, because as you could be a service provider and have multiple facilities, that's then you offer as a service provider. But that's right. To the extent you would like to have that capability, you would need multiple import location agreements to do that.
Thanks, Scott. The next question is from Jamie Walker with CNRL, asking, are there requirements to be an aggregator, or can a single market participant aggregate multiple small sites of their own to meet the 5 megawatt minimum requirement?
Thanks, Jamie, for the question. There's no specific definition or requirement to become an aggregator, but really what we've allowed for is a service provider can bid and have multiple facilities bid of different volumes to reach that threshold and become a service provider with the one agreement. Yeah, so nothing that we stipulate specifically to do that, but again, have allowed for multiple or from load from multiple facilities to be bid in one proposal.
John, was there anything you wanted to add to that response? Okay, I
have
notes on that. Oh, John, thanks.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Scott.
Okay. I should maybe loop back to see if I think one of our subject matter experts might have been able to shed a bit more light on one of the questions that we covered previously. So I think, Eric, is that right? Are you able to?
Yeah, so just we'll loop back to Ed's question. So can LSS provider specify that an entire block of power, say 20 megawatts, must be fully armed and cannot be partially armed? So the answer to that question is that we only arm full blocks. So if you had offered in 20 megawatts, Ed, we would arm the full 20 megawatts. So hopefully that helps you out.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate that.
Thanks. Those are all the questions that we've had posed.
Okay, great. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for their time today and for logging in, and we very much appreciate your interest in LSSI, and we look forward to continuing down the path with our LSSI procurement competition. I think with that, if there's no more questions, we can certainly close out. So thanks again, everyone, and we look forward to seeing those expression of interest forms and continuing further down the path of the procurement.
Oh, sorry, it looks like there was a question, a follow-up question from John.
Okay, great.
John has asked from Syncrude, so to be clear, you cannot offer, for example, one block with an arming price at X dollars and a second at Y dollars. It can only be one?
So in this case here, what I think you're maybe trying to look at, John, we definitely can, if you have some further questions, we can definitely answer them in more detail here through the mechanism that Scott laid out. But in this case here, what you would do is you would create one RFP for load X. Mm-hmm. You have an arming price for load X. You'd put a second submission in for Y at Y dollars and Z at Z dollars. You'd go through and do it that way. We don't have the capability for the same load or the same provider to go through and arm different blocks. These would have to be separate submissions. It'd still be by the same provider. So Syncrude could have RFP 1 is at X, RFP 2 is the Y load, and RFP 3 is the Z load. That's how that would be accomplished.
You bet. Thanks, Ryan. Okay, excellent. Okay, I apologize. I should have paused a bit longer because we got a couple additional questions. So maybe I'll give it a bit more airtime just in case. Okay, not seeing any. Is that right, Diane? And
that's correct. No additional questions.
Okay, great. Excellent. Well, thanks very much for everyone's time today. And again, as we mentioned, we will provide answers to these questions and all of them, including the ones we answered and the ones we had to take away. We'll post them all on our website shortly after the session here today. And again, we appreciate the time and look forward to continuing in the procurement competition. So thanks again, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.